This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Sirkin.
Well, I just ran down to get biscuits.
She's got a fistful of ginger nuts now.
Yeah, and also some crunchy creams.
Crunchy creams.
We like the crunchy creams over here.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't manage to get time to make a hot drink. And it is cold in here today, isn't it?
And I'm gasping.
Why is it cold in here?
I don't know.
I've turned the aircon off.
When I got in here, there was icicles hanging from the ceiling.
There is. I've got one hanging off my nose now.
I thought that was nasal drip.
No, I don't have that.
Thank you for that, Paul.
That's all right.
I might have it after eating custard creams, but who knows. There's a West Kent Mine silent auction. What is a silent auction?
It's where you don't say anything. You'd hate it.
I would. I'd hate it.
You wouldn't be very good at it.
She'd be rubbish, wouldn't she?
I'm really bad at auctions anyway, because the more I drink, the more I bid.
Yeah.
And
That makes you very good at auctions for charity.
I come away with things that I never use or get or whatever. Anyway, so this is Friday the 7th. I don't understand this. Friday 7th, Sunday 16th.
Of October.
A long thing.
It's running for a week. It's a silent auction run for a week. You put your bids in and it just ups and the highest bid wins, I'm guessing.
I don't know anything about silent auctions. So following the success of last year's silent auction, which I know nothing about either, it's raised over £5,000 for local mental health charities. West Kent Mine, that's brilliant. This year's silent auction promises to be even bigger and better, they say. So it's running from Friday the 7th to Sunday the 16th. And you can go to westkentmind.org.uk/auction. That's three W's, westkentmind.org.uk/auction. Simon Teague's already making a bid. I can see him.
Oh, I'm on the case.
And it hasn't even gone live yet. Or has it? What date is it today? I only know should we go to Javier Beach today or should we go to Moriah Beach? That's been my life for two weeks. Flip-flops, you know. Anyway, so it's going to be filled with fantastic prizes to bid on, and the 100% of the profits raised going towards helping local people get well, stay well and thrive. And there really will be something for everyone, including private venue hire of the gorgeous Ruth's Lost Garden of Sevenoaks. I need to go there. Mm-hmm. Do you say Ruth's, R-E-U-T-H-E-S, or is it Ruth's?
Mm-hmm.
Has anyone been there?
Mm. No, I haven't actually.
Is it open now in the winter?
I don't know. But going across Kent from Ashford to that part of the world is actually a longer trip than going up to central London, because you can get on the high speed in central London in 45 minutes. To get to Sevenoaks from here is an hour plus.
So what you're saying, we should go to a secret garden in London instead?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying it's hard to get to, which is why I've not been.
Yeah. Although you could drive, of course.
Well, yeah, it's hard to get to because it takes over an hour.
Okay.
Yeah.
Driving.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm. yeah.
Anyway, there's a bespoke paddleboard session for six. There are driving lessons, which is brilliant if any of our young people are listening for driving lessons, because we know how expensive they can be. Pampering treatments, holiday vouchers. We all love a holiday, don't
we? I'll go for the pampering.
You probably need it, Simon.
I need a lot of pampering, yeah.
I do. Dining experiences. Lovely. Show tickets, interior design consultation, and much, much more. And the benefit of a silent auction, now I'm going to find out what they are, is that it can run across a whole week, allowing people to dip in and out and receive notifications that have been outbid on a lot, if they've been outbid on a lot. This makes for a very exciting last day of bidding, as fantastic prizes can change hands several times before being claimed by the eventual highest bidder. Local businesses and individuals have been hugely generous with some incredible prizes, and this will help to raise vital funds to support services in the local community. So there are three ways to support. You can donate a fabulous prize. Prizes can be donated right up until the auction goes live on Friday the 7th of October. So that must be this Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And please contact fundraising at westkentmind.org.uk. And you can also go to the special online auction, which is westkentmind.org.uk /auction. And also, if you want to make a donation, of course you can. So that's great. There's quite a few auctions and charity things going on, I see.
Yeah, it's that time of year, isn't it?
Yeah, why does it always happen this time of year?
Christmas, isn't it?
Oh, please don't mention that. I've only just recovered from last Christmas.
Yeah, I went into a garden centre on Saturday. Christmas decorations were up and they were playing Christmas music.
No.
And what was it, the 1st or the 2nd of October?
I would have
almost
vomited.
Tempted to name and shame on air, but I won't.
I would have vomited and left.
Yeah, well, I wanted to, but we needed stuff from there.
he needed a Christmas tree.
And some baubles.
Needed some baubles.
And
to go with my ginger nuts.
That's a bit personal. Wayne Cunnington has just chipped in as well. His new car, he says, is a mild hybrid. Sounds like gardening to me. It's a mild hybrid. Braking charges it. When you accelerate, you use the battery.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So
that's how Formula One car works.
Yeah.
Sounds a bit. I can't get my.
Don't worry about it.
I'd rather watch hybrid gardening.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Yeah, get an e-scooter. Yeah. You'll be fine. Kent Women in Business brunch, the autumn celebration 2022. Join us at the brilliant Kent Women in Business for autumn celebration. Inspirational speakers, networking, and delicious brunch hosted by Deborah Turner and Sue Hainsby, taking place this Thursday, the 6th of October. 9:30 till 12:30, and it's happening at the Orangery in Turkey Mill in Maidstone. If you want to find out more or to book your place, kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar. I'm going to do one more email and then we're going to talk to Simon Webster. ZC Live 2022 is happening. It's going to be live this year. All tickets, free entry, VIP breakfast can be found and booked through the Eventbrite registration system. You can find the registration button on the top right hand side of the webpage, which I'll give you in a minute. Learn how to accelerate your digital and social media marketing in your business and create more leads by mastering key strategies and tips over a whole day with top speakers as well as international speaker, business owner and TV commentator Zoe Cairns, alongside some other amazing speakers talking about Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, content creation and more. It's taking place on Friday the 28th of October, 8 a.m. to 6:30. To 4:30, sorry, 8 a.m. to 4:30, and it's taking place at the Strood Academy, which is in Carnation Road, Strood. If you want to find out more, go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar. You can find all the details and book your free ticket.
Well, hey, and we like Zoe Cairns. She's very good news. She's been around and she knows what she's talking about.
Absolutely, and the ZC Live event is brilliant. It really is brilliant. The last one I went to, they had a virtual one last year, but the year before when it was, or the last time it was live, there was something like 500 people there.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
She really has carved a little niche for herself, so good to her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Power to her elbow.
Exactly. Right, let's talk to Simon. Simon Webster.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, Simon.
Thanks for having me. It's nice to be here.
No, it's a pleasure. You might know that Simon's quite comfortable in this studio. Simon used to do a regular financial show for us.
I did. Money Talk. Yeah. Still got the website up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes,
and in fact,
that.
You can still hear some of the shows because we do have an archive of them.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it's on the moneytalk.guru website.
Exactly. So there you go. So Simon is from Talis IFA, Independent Financial Advisors.
I am indeed.
Just tell us a little bit about Simon and Talis to start with.
Simon's been a financial advisor for 40 years. I'm married to the lovely Pam, who was also a financial advisor until she retired a couple of years ago.
Yep.
I have 7 grandchildren, the oldest of whom is 22, at which point you say, you don't look young enough, old enough, and the youngest of whom is but 12 weeks or 11 weeks old. So we've got them well spread.
Mm. You're going to be a great-granddad soon then, aren't you?
I've told my oldest grandchild if she makes me a great-granddad anytime soon, she will be disinherited, and she believes me. So we'll see what happens. I don't quite want that yet. I founded a business in Ashford about 30 years ago, and that ultimately morphed into Talis, which I'm sort of handing over the reins. And we've got a new MD, a guy called James Cole, who's much younger than me, very fit, lovely guy. Like him a lot. We were incredibly fortunate in lockdown. We went into lockdown with 20 people.
Right.
We came out of lockdown with 30 people.
Wow.
And the business is doing okay. And primarily because there are so many moving parts to matters financial these days that people need what financial advisors sell.
Yep.
Which is advice.
Absolutely.
And so for us, it's you know, the crisis has bred opportunity. We are incredibly mindful that for so many people, people in hospitality, people in tourism, people in retail in particular. Those three areas and many others were really hammered in lockdown. So we felt really privileged and ever so slightly embarrassed that we were doing okay when everybody else was bleeding on the carpet. But we were just so grateful, and it's been a real privilege and a pleasure to build the business and see it doing okay, despite the fact that markets have been really, really choppy of late for reasons known to us all, which we might be talking about in due course.
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think choppy's a good word.
Choppy's a good word, isn't it? Yeah.
Choppy's a good word to use. I just want to ask you something, because I was listening to your ad that we play quite regularly, which reminded me, and I saw an ad for somebody else on social media last night, and it just struck me. It was about life insurance.
Yeah.
And I'm old enough to remember when everybody talked about, I actually even worked for a life insurance company back in the 80s, in the 70s, I worked for Abbey Life. Once upon a time, everybody talked an awful lot about life insurance, but you don't hear it talked about as much as you used to.
That's probably true, and it's a great shame. I think there are two reasons for that. In 1988, when they brought in the Financial Services Act and the Professor Gower report that led to all this regulation that we all enjoy so much these days, there were approximately 368,000 financial advisors trading in the UK. Wow. This is a fact.
Right.
Admittedly, the vast majority of them were hairdressers within the previous 3 or 4 weeks, because it was quite literally they could find anybody that was prepared to come and work for them, they'd hire them, and I was one of them.
Yeah.
But after financial services regulation...
You used to be a hairdresser?
No, I used to be an accountant, which is possibly why I survived. But the interesting bit now is there's less than 40,000 financial advisors to give financial advice in the UK. And so there are far less people having those really important conversations. And unlike just about any other financial product, life insurance is sold, not bought. So people rarely wake up in the morning and think, oh, I've got to go and buy some life insurance. Like, they might get somebody, they get a mortgage, somebody will talk to them about it, or they think, I really need to do something about that. But the vast majority of life insurance is sold, not bought. So the net result is there's 320,000 people less selling it than there were 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And that is why you don't hear it talked about so much.
And I don't want to overdwell on it, because it's only a part of the market, of course, as well. Before the Gower report, there was quite a few shenanigans in the market.
Still have been. I mean, this is the problem. As with so many regulations, you try and legislate against human nature, and all the money laundering is a prime example. We're all paranoid about money laundering. If you want to take on a client as an accountant, a solicitor, or financial advisor, driving license and passport required for evidence of identity. Well, those are so easily forged that effectively the criminals, it's an utterly meaningless farce. Yeah. And yet some of the major banks have been fined tens of millions of pounds for failure to tick the right boxes. Now, one or two of their staff have been driving coach and horses through it, because bent guys have been doing very bent things.
Yeah.
But we are all dealing with this mountain of regulation, primarily aimed at demonstrating that the government has done something about a problem, rather than actually fixing the problem. Now, to some degree, you can have a conversation about money laundering, about how you would fix that problem, but that's a subject for another radio show, perhaps. But there are so many regulations aimed at this sort of stuff, and yet the succession of frauds, we've got scam lines and scam alerts on pensions these days. I mean, you start talking about that, we'd be here all day. It's just ridiculous.
It is interesting, isn't it? That it's actually just an arms race. All of this stuff, you know, you introduce regulations and then some smart ass finds a way around it with some loophole. I'm thinking of kind of legal loopholes rather than illegal loopholes. Yeah. You know, no matter what regulations you introduce, someone will always find something that they can use as a workaround.
The most obvious parallel is the UK tax code. The UK tax code, I forget the number, but it's a pile of paper.
It's 12,000 pages.
It's 12,000 pages. It's a lot. And the UK answer to every problem is to invent another rule.
Yeah.
But, for example, the UK tax man has never defined what is income.
Yeah.
Because as soon as they define it, some smart-aleck accountant will find some form of remuneration that isn't
income.
Yeah,
yeah.
But they've managed to achieve exactly the same thing in Hong Kong before it was became part of China again, with a tax code that's 20 pages long.
Yeah.
And so we have this £12,000 tax code. So while many people will be here surprised to hear the first thing I say political today is Liz Truss is right, cutting cutting bureaucracy, cutting regulation, cutting down the tax code. She is right. We desperately need to do it. The fact that she went about it in the most cack-handy possible way imaginable is another conversation altogether. Sure. But the fundamental message is right.
Absolutely, and I couldn't agree more. You know, a lot of people get very vexed about tax evasion and tax avoidance, and they mix the two up continually as well.
The difference.
Yeah. Interestingly, though, HMRC don't help because they now have a thing where they have tax avoidance, which they also think is not legitimate. Yeah, so they pass rules on legitimate tax avoidance schemes.
General tax avoidance legislation is actually in there, and stuff is caught by this, and it's yes.
Yeah, and they go, no, you can't do that after you've done it. Hence, we get things like this debacle over the loan charge.
Yeah, this is how Jimmy Carr got done. His accountant said it was perfectly legit, went for it. It seemed like it was a perfectly acceptable tax plan. It turned out it was a bridge too far.
Yeah.
But the revenue only said that after the event. But Jimmy Carr's been trading a very useful career on the back of his on the back of it ever since, because he played it just right. But that's not the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, coming back to your point, you know, we never dispense with legislation. We always add to it. We never take it away. And the problem is, it then becomes so complicated. But in that complication is where people find the loopholes, because things contradict each other in the legislation. If we could get to the point where we went, let's clear all this away and write a tax code that is simple, easy to understand, and make sure that we get the right amount of tax from everybody, we'd be far better off.
Yeah, but who hasn't been offered a discount for cash by a builder
or other
tradesmen? And that's just to try and avoid 20% VAT.
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting...
Is that why they're trying to get rid of cash, do you think? One of the reasons, the government?
Well, I don't know they're trying to get rid of cash, but certainly spending habits are that we are less interested in handling stuff that other people have handled.
Try and get some money from Lloyd's bank in Whitstable High Street. They don't give out cash anymore.
They're a cashless bank now.
Are they really?
Yeah. If you go in and ask for cash, they go, no, we're a cashless bank.
I think it's coming. Wow. I mean, I go out regularly without my wallet, and I use my phone to pay for just about everything. I've got two credit cards on there.
But the funny thing about that is I do exactly the same. I was in Tesco's. I had an entire week shopping in a basket, and it declined my Apple Pay for some reason. And that was it. I went, well, sorry, you'll have to have the shopping bank. I haven't got any other means of paying.
And what happens if the internet went down?
Yeah.
We've had that, or whether there's a power cut, which is the other thing.
Power cuts in supermarkets are brilliant.
They are
absolutely brilliant.
Because they then have to get the machines out to do the credit
card. Well, the last time it happened to me, the store manager came out the front and he went, we're going to do negotiating. He's looked at my basket. He said, if I asked for 150 quid, would you pay it? I went, no. He said, what would you pay? I said, 50. He went, don't be stupid. I went, go on then, 100. He went, yeah, done.
Really?
Yeah. And that's how they worked it out. Wow. They just guessed.
I was in M&S last night and I was a bit knackered. And it was all, this is Whitstable again, it was all self-checkout apart from one till with three people queuing. And I just looked at the self-checkout and I looked at my basket. Oh, I can't, you know.
This is where the cashless things are starting to happen. For the supermarkets, because we've had all this talent shortage and all the rest of it, they're trying to get it all to move to self-checkout.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's with the scanners, if you're not in the mood, it's exhausting.
No. But
I don't want to be a checkout system.
The real problem, though, and my wife had this the other week. We are in the happy situation. We do not need to cheat. I've got a professional job. The last thing I want is somebody saying Simon's wife tries to Tesco's out of a can of baked beans. Yeah. We are paranoid when we go around there to make sure everything goes through. And some of the new guns that you've got on the Tesco Shop and Pay, which I think the Folkestone have upgraded to, takes the picture, and their internet is not strong enough, or their Wi-Fi is not strong enough to work it properly. And Pam said to me, I went through the Tesco's checkout and they found two items that hadn't taken. They were worth £2 and the whole lot had to go through the thing.
No.
She was absolutely mortified. It was terrible. It was £2, you know.
How does that work? You have to click it as you go around, because I don't really go to supermarkets much, but you click it as you go round, and then have to go through a checkout.
Well, no, what happens is they do a random check. So you have your own scan, scan a barcode and it tallies your bill on a handheld. It looks like a bit like a Star Trek phaser.
Yeah.
And it tallies your bill, and then you point it at the checkout machine, and if you've got booze, for example, you automatically, a person comes to make sure that you look over 21 so that you can buy the booze. Unfortunately, I do just about look over 21 now. And then they do a random check as well. So they then go through and say, right, well, we'll take 10 items out of your 50 items in the basket and make sure they all scanned. Mm. But if they find one that you didn't scan, then you had to put the whole lot through the conveyor belt. Yeah. And the woman who did it was very apologetic with Pam and said, do not misunderstand me, madam. We do not think you are responsible. This is our system. It's got problems. We are really sorry, but the rules say we've got to do this. Mm. But, you know,
you
it took an extra half an hour.
Still feel like a mug, and it
wasted half an hour of our life.
Another reason to go to small shops, individual.
In America, apparently, there's a new superstore, and they're trialling... And we'll see this. I think we'll see this in the future. You know, when you go to Gatwick and you go through the, you know, and it's, they've got this thing where you go through with your trolley full of your full of the food, and it scans every barcode in that trolley.
Yeah.
Wow.
Amazon. In one go. Bang.
It's Amazon.
Yeah.
In London.
Yeah. There's Amazon stores. 20 years ago, I was working in the US, and I went to a Kmart store. And there was nobody on the checkout. And what you did is you emptied your basket into a hopper, and then it had a holographic reader, and it read everything and then released it. And then they employed someone at the end to put it in a bag for you.
But if that was 20 years ago, it's interesting that it hasn't taken off yet.
Know. The thing is, Waitrose have been doing self-checkout for at least 10 years, and their system works. Sainsbury's and Tesco's have only just introduced it, and it's got massive teething problems.
Well, Tesco have been doing it, I think, for at least the last 6 or 7 years.
Right.
But they've upgraded the system, and the upgrade has had the problems, because they try to get more sophisticated with the tech.
The thing is, you've got to be in the mood. So sometimes, you know, you grab a few things and you're a bit tired, and it's, you know, or you might not be feeling well, and then to do that is just like...
Right, well, the way that the Amazon one works is like a hotel fridge.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
When you take it off the shelf, it records you have taken it.
Well, that seems a bit less stressful.
And your phone identifies you to the shop when you go in, and it just builds your Amazon account.
This is why I'm looking at a Clear phone. Have you heard of Clear phones?
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
Where they can't track you, like the Apple phone, because everything we do is tracked now.
Yeah. The problem that you've got with that, which is fine, is great, but then you can't use a store and you can't pay for anything.
But the other answer is, and I mean, I hear this periodically, and I understand people are sensitive about it. I don't give a monkey's who knows where I am. You know, I'm not worried about being tracked. I've got nothing to hide. What's the issue? I genuinely don't. There's 60 million people in the UK. They don't have enough bodies to research 60 million snail trails of where you've been.
I think the fear is things like the stunt that Trudeau pulled in Canada, where he had people's bank accounts frozen because he didn't agree with their politics.
Yeah. Yes.
And I think that's what people fear, is that...
Or not being able to buy a steak because you've had a steak the week before, which could well be coming.
Yeah. I think that's what people's...
Or not being able to drive 70 miles because you've already done
electric cars, you can't go there, you've done your quota. But it's the social credit score that they have in China, which... it tracks everybody and stops.
Hopefully, we were going to talk about the economy.
Yeah, let's go back to
back on track.
Yeah. We'll talk about some of the financial issues that we're facing. As you say, there's some financial issues. I noticed that Deutsche Bank and Credit Suisse are both in trouble again. The Deutsche Bank's been in trouble for donkey's years. How they keep surviving, I've no idea.
Over the years,
But they're in trouble again, if we allow them to fail in the way that we allowed the banks to fail the last time, we could be in trouble.
Well, the Germans could.
Yeah, exactly.
And the Germans are in a lot of trouble over Russian gas because, of course, the UK had 5% of its gas from Russia, whereas Germany had about 45% of its gas from Russia, and that was Merkel's legacy up in smoke.
Absolutely.
Or actually not up in smoke.
There's nothing to light. Germany in big trouble industrially. Their car market is down the tubes because we've got a global semiconductor shortage. They can't build and sell cars.
I can't buy my new car.
Yeah,
18-month waiting list.
I ordered my new BMW nearly a year ago, and they've just told me they can't deliver it. So it's
there's a lot going on. I mean, this is the post. I mean, this is the bit. We'll segue into economics and we'll try and do it, because one of the points I wanted to make, and this is the big debate at the moment. There's lots and lots of moving parts, and cutting through the noise and trying to understand what is happening for real, as opposed to the shouted headlines, is really, really challenging. But I mean, if we say that UK inflation is 10%, it's probably slightly more than that at the moment. But let's pretend it's 10%, because that's a nice round figure. 80% of that is caused by energy-related price increases, which are almost exclusively on the back of the Ukraine war. And who knew that was going to happen in January? Well, one or two smart people possibly did, but everybody else, including most of the defence establishment, didn't. And world supply chain slowdown post-COVID, while we all ramp up production again, and China's still half in lockdown, and a lot of the semiconductors and stuff like that comes from China. So we've got all sorts of issues, but 80% of our inflation of 10% comes from things that are outside the control of the UK government and outside control of the UK PLC. Full stop.
Yeah.
So the UK domestic inflation rate is 2%, which is the Bank of England target. So why raise interest rates to combat inflation, which is not caused in the UK? It's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Now, I have a theory, and I'm going to put this on air, and we'll see whether this... I'll come back in 3 months' time, and we'll find out if I'm
right. We'll see,
Well, the big thing is the R word, the recession word. Yeah. Now, they've been screaming recession for ages, and if they talk loudly enough and long enough, they might actually be right. But bear in mind, Mr. Businessman, joining is not compulsory. So there's a recession, you don't have to join it, but if the UK goes that way, it might be an issue. And if it does, the Bank of England needs to be able to cut interest rates in order to cope with the recession. Now, it doesn't actually have to go into recession. It could just be bumbling around and slowing down, so they need to speed the economy back up. And you can bet that all the mood music from number 10 is, we need some economic good news before the election. So I don't care there's no recession. I don't care it may stoke inflation. I want you, independent Bank of England, to cut interest rates so that we get some growth. And I can see over the next 6 months that there are going to be cuts in interest rates coming back. I'm pretty much convinced that this is going to happen. I see you smiling.
I'm smiling because I totally agree with you, because I'm a cynical old git as well.
So I can see interest rates just being a temporary spike and then starting to ease back down again.
You can't cut interest rates if you're already at zero.
Exactly.
And that's the problem.
Yeah. So we've been really good at talking ourselves, psyching ourselves up into recession and giving all this bad news. And yet, we weren't in recession. And yet, if you talk to business leaders outside of the 45% tax
issue,
which was a huge political mistake of gargantuan proportions, I can't say how cross I am about it, most of the rest of the stuff that they were trying to do was generally accepted by business to be a really good idea. Cut some regulation, make it easier, put some economic development areas in, deal with an energy price spike, do all this stuff, all really positive. And yet the only thing we've talked about is the 45% tax rate, which nobody wants. I know quite a lot of people who pay 45% tax, because my job to advise them how to pay a bit less. But they didn't care. Nobody was asking for it. It may have brought a bit of simplification, but if you're going to cut tax, the last thing you want to do is cut it at a time when everybody else is bleeding on the carpet. It's insane.
I totally agree. And funnily enough, if he did really want to do something decent, what they should have done is cut the 61% rate, which is the marginal rate,
between 12 and 125.
Which would have had far more effect.
Yes. and a lot more people suffer.
Exactly.
And actually, and I mean, it's interesting, because I know lots of people, we specifically plan to make sure their incomes under 100,000 quid, just to, hands going up in the room. We've specifically planned to make sure that our income is £99,998. Why? Because I don't want to pay 60% tax on the income between 100 and 125.
Yeah.
You're nodding, you know that as well, didn't you, Simon?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a huge tax trap.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I was going to
earn as much as you guys, though, but, it didn't worry me. But,
no, we don't earn it, we're just giving it.
We advise and consult businesses, and if these guys are... If these guys are artificially reducing their income, they've got less money in their pockets to spend.
Yeah.
And while I don't totally buy into the trickle-down bit, the more people are out in restaurants, the more people are out on paying entertainment, the more people are buying holidays, the more money cycling into the UK economy, the more people are buying cars. You know, everybody says, what are you doing buying that flash new car? Well, I'm sure the bloke on the production line in Dagenham is going, well, thank you very much indeed for my job that I get to put the wheels on the car and a high-paid job making the engine.
And the garage that sold it to you, and the garage garage that's going to service it for
all,
you.
All of those people in the supply chain.
And the person that sold your old car.
All those people that we're, those who've actually got a couple of bob are actually helping drive the economy.
Just on these things, and I agree with you on the 45, I don't understand why you would introduce that at that time. And now, of course, they've really shot themselves in the foot because they can never reduce it now. They can't go back.
Well, the interesting thing is, I'm still pro lower tax for high earners, says the Prime Minister. But how much longer she's going to be the Prime Minister for is
it's just not going to be doable, is it? But the interesting thing is, the other thing that people got agitated about, which I just couldn't understand at all, was bankers' bonuses. The government don't pay bankers' bonuses. Banks pay bankers' bonuses.
Yes.
For every £1 million bonus, the government get £400,000.
Yes.
Yeah. So what's the problem there? You just increase your tax take.
Well, I totally agree with you, but as they sort of said, it's the selling, the preparation of the ground. Mm. The reality is, if you've got a medium-sized international bank that can locate in Paris or Frankfurt or the UK, or New York,
or Dublin, then
they're going to look at the top guys who make that decision, are going to say, where's good for business? Well, I've just named five cities that are good for business. Mm. Now, where's the decent standard of living? Well, actually, they've all got a pretty reasonable standard of living. What are our costs? Well, tax is a big cost. Our personal tax bill, that's going to be really big over there. The UK's dirt cheap. Let's take our 500 other jobs with their thing, which also generate tax figure, to the UK. Mm. Now, I sort of get that because, you know, you're always going to have people at the top making a lot of money. You may not like it. And, you know, you can argue that £1 million bonus for a banker is immoral. And that is a conversation. It's a legitimate conversation to have.
But I just want to say this because this staggers me sometimes. You know, people get very agitated about this, but nobody mentions footballers that earn a damn sight more than bankers.
Yeah.
And you might say, well, footballers are more important than bankers, and that may or may not be true, but nobody ever gets agitated by Tom Cruise earning, you know, 50 million for a movie. They get agitated by someone that works in a bank.
Well, the trouble is people all think that banks are crooks, bankers are crooks, because of the economic meltdown that we had a few years ago. So there's a lot of that. But of course, the problem with all of this stuff is it has consequences in the real world to real people. And we can talk about 45% tax rate. Most people can only dream of making 50 grand a year, never making 100 or 120 or 150,000 to pay 45% tax. So the real world is, if you've got a mortgage and you were on a 2% fixed rate and it expires today, your best deal is going to be just under 6%. Now, that is a huge increase on top of a huge electricity bill.
And food has gone up.
And 10%. I mean,
my veg box has just gone up.
Prices are going up 10% across the board or more. And now your mortgage is doubling in cost. And that is a massive.
And you've
massive
got to
issue.
Find that money somewhere. And you've got children, you've got trainers, you've got all the usual stuff.
But that's the classic recipe for rampant inflation, isn't it? Because everybody then sits at work going, oh, you know, all my bills are going up. I'm going to have to put my prices up. And I put my prices up. So he puts his prices up. So you put your prices up. And then we'll go, I can't afford that. I'm putting my prices up again. You know, and
10% becomes 20%.
Exactly. And then you get runaway inflation because everybody's trying to survive.
Yeah.
Well, the only good news, and there is some good news.
Is there?
Yes, there is. I try to give the good news, Jules, because it's not all bad. Effectively, most of this offshore inflation caused by Putin effectively meant oil prices went up a lot. Net result, gas prices went up a lot, the same thing. And so effectively, prices were one, they became two, and we ended up with this massive, massive inflation. But when prices stay at two, or indeed start to come down, and we were talking off air before we came in about the spot gas price, future price coming down now, finally, which is great, as we've started to find other sources of supply, that inflation drops out of the equation.
Yeah.
You have a higher base, it's still more expensive, but it's not going to be more expensive again. And if this spot price that we've talked about is really indicative of what is going to happen, which is prices are starting to stabilize, they won't be quite so high, then inflation flattens out. And that inflation figure goes from 10 to 5 back down to 3 or 4 because we've still got supply chain issues. But the supply chain globally is starting to wake up. Mm. Australia's ended lockdown. Now, they don't produce a huge amount of anything in terms of electronic components, but they export a lot of raw materials and minerals. Mm. China is ultimately going to have to change its lockdown policy now that COVID is less likely to kill you than the early variants were. At some point, they're going to have some common sense and say, we can ease this total lockdown policy. When they do that, China will ramp back up, and I think we will all be pleasantly surprised by how quickly China can ramp back up. Yeah. There are conveyor belts and machine shops and everything else sitting around empty. They're all clean, they're all maintained. They just go back and put some people in, turn a switch, and it starts coming out.
Yeah, but should we not be looking at other countries other than China?
Vietnam, Singapore, long-term, yes. But nevertheless, it's India. A question of where it's coming from.
Yeah, this is one of the reasons why the spot price of gas has actually dropped. Yeah. Here in Europe, where we're big consumers of it and not producers, even though we could be, but we stopped producing it, we've been reliant on cheap gas from the Soviet Union,
yep.
Russia. What's happening now is because somebody blew up the pipeline and nobody's claiming responsibility for that at the moment.
Russians.
I heard it was Americans.
Yeah. But
it's bonkers.
But people have started to source alternatives. So you've got liquid natural gas, and they've started to source alternatives which were too expensive before. Mm. But now the price has gone through the roof. They're no longer too expensive. So we're sourcing things from alternative places, which is bringing the spot price down again.
Mm. And they've put two big liquid gas platforms just offshore for Germany to deal with German stuff. That's actually now all that infrastructure is already in place.
Yeah.
Poland is now exporting gas to Germany.
Yeah.
So they are starting to achieve these lines.
Exactly. And that's what happens in these things, isn't it? Is that you look at a fixed view of the world, something happens to change it, then you all have to scrabble around for a little while, and while you're going through that, everything goes to bananas.
Yeah? We're all in a great deal of pain.
Yeah, and until it settles down again and we find alternative streams, and you know, we've allowed more natural gas and oil production licenses back in the UK, which we should have been doing anyway.
Fracking's back on the agenda in the UK. Love it or loathe it. It's not caused massive problems in the States.
Yeah. It's there's a lot of nonsense talked about things like that. Yeah. But so we're finding alternative sources. So hopefully the cost of energy will get back down to some kind of reasonable levels fairly soon. Mm. In which case, you take off a lot of the pressure of a lot of these things.
Yeah. And interest rates will start to come down. So I think you're in a perfect storm at the moment. And if you need to get another fixed rate at the moment, I'd be very tempted to do a short one, just to sort of as a hedge. Yeah. Because I think 3 years down a year or 18 months down the line, the rates will be back. A lot closer to threes and fours rather than fives and sixes.
I agree with you. And I also, one of the questions I like to ask quite a lot, my bank sent me a very quick message on the day going, oh, your mortgage could go up. And I went, I don't want to know about that. I want to know what my savings rate's going to be.
Yeah, well, they never like to tell you that.
No. Well, yeah, no. You can still have 0.02%.
That's very kind of them, isn't it? Very kind of them. Well, this is, of course, how a lot of finance houses make their money from instability, because they trade off the spread.
Yeah.
And when there's big volatility, there's much bigger spreads, and they make quite a lot of money.
Yep.
So we've seen the utility companies making outrageous profits. I suspect the banks are going to have a very, very, very good year over the next 12, 18 months.
Yeah.
And that'll be an interesting... But it's worth spending a moment on investment markets. We've got time to cover investment markets. We talked about interest rates and mortgages, my other area that we talk about. I mean, one of my favourite lines in this general investment market debate is the single biggest asset class held by Joe Public in the UK is their house.
Yeah.
Why? Because prices go up and prices go down, but you still need somewhere to live, and in the vast majority of cases, if you can possibly afford it, you carry on paying the mortgage. Now, I know that for some people at the moment that might be impossible, and that's a tragedy, but for everybody else that can, then when prices recover, you'll be back ahead again.
Yeah.
So whether prices are going to dip now or not is another conversation. I saw some idiot saying prices were going to drop 20% over the next 6 months. No.
Ain't going to happen.
Wrong answer. Ain't going to happen. Okay. The rate of increase might slow down. You might see it come off just a little bit. But effectively, prices have gone up so hard last year,
yeah.
I don't think they're going to come, they won't be going down below what they were at the beginning of last year.
No.
That's my, you heard it here first, folks. You can shoot me afterwards. That's not financial advice. That's just one man's opinion, dear listener. But here's the thing. First quarter of this year, investment markets came off up to 15% because we had a perfect storm. The stock markets were down and the bond market has gone down. Government bonds took a real hammering. Now, there's complicated economic reasons for that. We haven't got time to do that particular lesson, and you'll be very pleased. I don't feel up to giving it anyway. But they did. But the reality is now that has stabilised and the long-term hold says, historically, you have these blips and they recover. And we have had, I've got a couple of thousand clients that I look after money for. I have one client take their money out, and in point of fact, he hasn't actually admitted it because he's trying to make a fuss. But his money is now worth nearly what it was at the beginning of the whole saga. He took it out right at the dip because he panicked. Right. And we said, day one, you know, markets go down, markets go up. Murphy's Law says 6 months after you invest this money, it could go down. You've just got to hold your nerve and ride the storm, and it will come out. Because this is a medium to long-term hold.
Once the world's richest man, and currently the third richest man in the world, Warren Buffett, has told people this so often, yeah, invest for the long term.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the time to run into a building is when everybody else is leaving.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely the point. So if you're sitting on spare cash at the moment,
yeah,
I think it's probably not a bad time, subject to all the usual caveats. Take financial advice. This is not financial advice, just one man's opinion. But now is actually a pretty blooming good time to get in, because I don't think it's going to get much lower. Now, I could, of course, be wrong. Because
yeah,
if Putin drops a nuclear weapon on the battlefield and the US take out the Black Sea Fleet and all the Russian forces in Ukraine, which is what will happen if Putin gets stupid, then, of course, we're going to have 6 months of Armageddon and you'll see stock markets absolutely plummet, apart from arms manufacturers, which go through the roof. I don't think that happens.
Literally.
Yeah.
Literally goes through the roof.
I didn't mean that, but it actually was quite a clever line. I wish I'd thought of that before I said it, because I could have then timed it better and made myself sound really clever. But, that's the Armageddon scenario.
Yeah.
But I think it's much more likely that sometime soon we're going to see regime change in Russia.
Yeah.
Because I think Putin is now so unpopular at home that I don't put it past somebody somewhere with the money and resources to
open window,
encourage him to retire.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm actually staggered he's managed to last as long as he has, if I'm really honest, because he's been through... those generals that haven't been killed. He's been through a few of them falling out of windows recently.
He's lost over 100 generals, which kind of begs the question, how many perishing... I don't know how many.
Where's
generals...
Where's he get them from?
Well, he's digging a lot of them out of retirement. Did you see that fat old boy that he got out the other day? You can see the look... It was hilarious. They appointed this guy to run one part of, I think, the Donbass. And he was 71. They bought him out of retirement. He must have been 30 stone. How they got a uniform to fit him, I don't know. And he stood there looking like, you know, call this life. I was just about, you know, I was happily retired in my Black Sea villa, and they've pulled me out to do this again.
But the Ukrainian army, which has had all the time since they invaded the Crimea to prepare for this eventuality, so they've had conscription, they've had lots and lots of heavy training. They have a very professional army in Ukraine. They have been getting themselves ready, and they've got the basic guerrilla tactic. What you do is you find the guys with the shiny bits on their epaulets and you snipe them.
Yeah.
And they've been targeting top guys, which is how they've lost so many. And there's no discipline, there's no command and control.
Yeah.
And the Russian army has been exposed for a sham, an absolute house of cards.
Yeah.
Absolute house. I've got a story. Quick story.
We're fast running out of time.
Your own show, Simon.
I could talk forever. But the during the Second World War, this is a war story, but it's the Second World War, the Germans were building a wooden airstrip with wooden airplanes to actually confuse the Brits about where their forces were and what was going on. There was a huge thing. Top secret. And the British Secret Service are watching this until it was absolutely completed. They invested millions and millions of Deutschmarks or whatever into hours of time and weeks of time. they said that Lancaster opened, it dropped a wooden bomb, right? Yeah. Right in the middle of it. And he just sort of like, we know what you're doing. It was absolute classic. And I wish there was a similar solution to what's going on in Ukraine, which was my excuse for bringing that up.
Absolutely. No, I did see that. Yeah. It made me laugh too. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It was a good story.
Excellent. And they had a picture of it as well, the wooden bomb. They kept it.
I think we have. I think we must have similar tastes because we see the same things in our social media streams.
What's your star sign?
I believe it's Scorpio, but I don't pay a huge amount of attention to
such. So are you November?
Yes. Yeah. I will be 64 in November this year.
Oh, you're younger than me then.
Oh, sorry about that.
Right, we're almost at the end of the show. We've got like 2 minutes. So have you got anything that you need to read? Well, but first of all, I want to say a big thank you to Simon Webster.
And your website, please?
www.talisifa.com.
That's it. Talis with one L.
Yeah, TalisIFA.com.
If you go to Kent Business Radio, there's a dirty great advert for them on the front of the page.
Because we're regular sponsors of this show, because we like you so much, Paul.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely. Yeah.
But Paul, I called you Paul.
Yeah.
Paul and Simon. Now, Wayne Cunnington is still listening in on the Tesco Wi-Fi, and he says something else battery cars have is a permanent internet link rather than rely on the user's separate contract.
Yep.
This is so your car can be tracked with a face. He puts a little face on. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
When I wrapped my Mercedes around a tree a couple of years ago, they sensed it straight away, and some woman started going, "You're all right, do you want to call an ambulance or whatever?" Oh. It wasn't through my phone,
it was
through the car.
Spooky.
Wow.
Okay.
Spooky, isn't it?
Yeah.
He hit something so hard it shook in Germany, and they picked up the phone.
It woke them up.
Woke them up in Germany.
Kent shook.
Did you see Tracy Ferguson? She tweeted, "I've met up with this lovely lady today, so I'll look forward to catching up with the replay B Bunker show." Now that looks to me the lovely lady, like my wine lady, or is it my?
I don't know because I can't see it, but we've got a minute left.
Or
so
is it my financial lady? I've lost track.
I don't know. You know, work it out.
Yeah.
There's a Night of Legends dinner at Gillingham Football Club. Ooh. At the Great Hall at Priestfields present a Night of Legends on November the 17th. Dine with all your favourite ex-Gillingham players. To book, email sales@priestfield.com. There's a social media workshop at the White Lion in Tenterton. It's a breakfast with Zoe Cairns. It's for members only, but if you are thinking of becoming a member of the Tenterton Chamber, you can get a place. It's on Tuesday the 8th of November, 8:30 a.m, ends at 10:30 at the White Lion in Tenterton High Street.
Bob BT has said about gas, depends on the type of winter there is across Europe. Gas pricing has dropped dramatically, but still isn't reflected in our costs as consumers. We need to build up storage facilities as we shut them down about 6 years ago.
Yep.
And you'll now say, of course, the other method.
Sorry?
The other method of power. Your baby that you're always talking about.
Nuclear.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nuclear. SMEs. Yeah.
Yeah.
We hope you can join us for our October networking. This is the Seven Oaks Chamber of Commerce. A meeting is sponsored by Chamber partner Hilden Park Accountants and hosted in the Hive at the Oaks Specialist College. We'll be raising money for the college and also for West Kent Mine ahead of World Mental Health Day on October the 10th. Gordon Tillman, who's the CEO, will share why the college has already become a successful and highly regarded provision for 18 to 25-year-olds with learning difficulties in Kent and East Sussex. The event is actually taking place tomorrow, manana, October the 5th, 10:30 till 12. If you want to find out about it, sevenoakschamber.com/events.
Gravesham Business Network, it's a meeting tonight, the 4th of October. Is tonight the 4th of October?
It is.
It's Gravesend Adult Education at the Victoria Centre in Darnley Road, Gravesend. That's 5:30 to 7:30, and you can go to eventbrite.co.uk/e/Gravesham Business Creative Networking Tickets.
Well, hey.
Yeah, there's an opportunity to make a difference to young people who are or have been in care. This is not a usual request for support, but a crucial one. Medway Council is working with Young Enterprise to offer a free business mentoring program for young people who are or have been in care. They're looking for someone between October and June for 6 months. Mentoring a group of young people as their business advisor, safeguarding training, DBS provided, a commitment of about an hour once every 1 or 2 weeks. They want business experience, a sense of humour and empathy. So if that's something you think you'd like to do, do get in touch with me, hello@bizradio.co.uk, and I will put you in touch with Sarah.
And good news here,
really good thing to do. Sorry,
coastal
Mills.
Communities will once again be served by direct high-speed trains all day after a timetable change was unveiled. This is good because we were hearing about stoppages.
Yeah.
So southeastern services connecting Deal, Walmer and Martin Mill to London St Pancras will now run hourly throughout the day from December the 11th when the new schedule comes into effect.
Right.
The regular direct link between the coast and the capital was severed during the pandemic as lockdown saw passenger numbers collapse. Services have slowly been restored, first with peak commuter trains and then some off-peak connections. But those travelling later in the day were still required to change in Ashford. We still haven't got the one to France, though, the Eurotrain.
No, and that's been kicked. That's been kicked a long way forward. Mm-hmm. But I tell you what, high speed in peak time from Ashford to London return now £77. Oh, I paid last week. £77.
Well, my new husband, as I said, went to a conference yesterday. Now he hasn't been out of the house. He's been working from home for 2 years practically, and he said, "Oh my God, it was hard work. The train." Just being at a conference and then going for dinner. Yeah. He was knackered when he got back at midnight.
Mm.
But I think he prefers working from home now.
I've had a tweet from Kim Stevens, and this is the last thing, and then we've got to close up for the day. Kim Stevens of Karen Ken, I'd love a Business Bunker shout out, please. Do you know someone that loves helping others, has a passion for welfare, would make a great carer? Maybe caring is their calling. If they'd like to look at working with us, call Amy today on Ashford 01233 619 530. Or follow Kim, Caring Kent, on the Twitter. And that's it. We've reached the end of another show.
Wow.
Wonderful.
I want to say a huge thank you to Simon Teague of the King's Summit, which is taking place at St Andrews this Thursday. In Canterbury this Thursday. And there are two tickets left.
Probably one and a half now.
Get in there now quick.
Yeah. So get in quick at thekingsummit.com. But Simon, thank you so much for joining us. A huge thank you to Simon Webster of Talis IFA for a quick update on economics, banking, war,
wooden bombs,
and history lessons.
Yeah.
As always, incredibly good value for money.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Simon.
Thank you for having me. It's
always a pleasure, and we look forward to your next visit. To my stonkingly gorgeous co-host, Jill Serkin.
I'd be having a pina colada about now.
She'd be having a pina colada about now. Would it be breakfast and you'd only have just got up?
A little brunch.
Okay. We'll be back with a show next week, though. In the meantime, stay safe, everybody, and we'll see you all again soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.